Sani Langtand and the Visitor. It was a grey day in the Cape. Rain was coming in clouds over the dark mountains, and the sea was snapping irritably at the harbour wall. Mountain water kept seeping into Sani Langtan's cave and making her firewood wet. After a while, she threw down the bellows and stamped on them in rage. "Go and tell Slangbeck to come and give me a light," she commanded me. So out I had to go into the cold and the rain. Maybe I should warn you that Sani Langtand is the meanest, scrawniest witch in the Kalkbay Mountains, and Slangbeck is a savage old dragon who spends most of his time draped over a pile of loot in his cave. That is, when he is not out flying or smoking with Sani Langtand. And then there's me, Boggum. I'm Sani Langtan's familiar, which means that I do most of the dirty work around her cave and that she sometimes rides me on business when she can't persuade Slangbeck to give her a lift. I'm a baboon, by the way, which is quite a nice thing to be if you live up on Kalkbay Mountain, or even if you don't. It's easy to pick me out from the other roadside baboons since I wear long Persian slippers and sometimes carry a shovel for digging up the "Don't feed the baboons" sign put up by all those people who've never had to eat Sani Langtan's cooking. I was not at all sure that Slangbeck would agree to come out in such weather, but when I found him in his cave, he was bored and wanted someone to talk to. Also, I think he felt in the mood for a bowl of Sani Langtan's sour milk. To my relief, Slangbeck decided to walk rather than fly. As he trundled through the bush, leaving a trail like a forestry path, he spread a wing for me to shelter under, like a large leathery umbrella. We walked up and down and round about so that Slangbeck could snuffle around all the places that interested him. I didn't mind, since standing against a dragon in wet weather is as good as being beside a hot stove. By the time we got home, Sani Langtan had been kept waiting a good long time and was ready to pick a fight with anything. She hardly seemed at all grateful when Slangbeck stuck his head in and huffed her fire alight. She just started puffing on her black clay pipe without a word of thanks and was soon shrouded in smoke. Slangbeck snatched up a mouthful of old coals and started smoking the way he likes to. And between the two of them, the air in the cave was getting pretty dark and thick. "Wet day to be out," said Slangbeck, hoping for his milk. "Foggy day to be out," snapped Sani Langtand from the corner of her rat-trap mouth. "Got lost, did you? Had to ask directions on Main Road?" And all the while, here I was, dying for a smoke and no fire to be had at all. "Now listen, you old hex," said Slangbeck, beginning to show a bit of fire at the corners of his mouth. "I never get lost. Not in time, not in space, not in the places between the stars. I'm not taking that from an old hag who needs a baboon to find her way about." By now, the atmosphere in the cave was getting hot with more than smoke, so I edged my way past Slangbeck and out into the cold air. The first thing I saw when my eyes had cleared, apart from Slangbeck's long tail trailing away from the cave, was a very wet-looking foreign gentleman staring with some concern at Slangbeck's backside. "If he thinks that's ugly," I thought to myself, "I can't wait till he sees Slangbeck's face, let alone Sani Langtan's, who's worse than a dragon at both ends." The foreign gentleman bowed low, until only his nose and slippers could be seen behind a huge turban. "Most esteemed sir," he cried as I scratched myself thoughtfully, wondering what to do with him. "I am an adventurer from the distant land of Persia, a messenger of emirs and sultans from the rolling desert sands. Alas, I find myself in a state of great distress, unable to make my way back home and report to the Pasha himself. The stranger held up the soggy ruins of a magic carpet, all mildewed and come to pieces in the Cape winter. To pile sorrow upon sorrow, my preferred means of transport has chosen this moment to divest itself of its powers of flight, not to mention its ability to travel home through time. Eh? Said I, like a simple hairy fellow from the hills, which is what I am, of course. The little gentleman straightened up and realized that he was talking to a baboon. I'm lost, he said. I need directions, and my time-traveling magic carpet has come to bits and won't fly anymore. Now, why couldn't you say that in the first place, I said, thinking that anyone who stood babbling about directions within tail-pulling distance of a dragon needed his head examined. As a rule, the only sensible direction to take is away from the dragon. Of course, I'd normally have chased him off with a few good barks and bites, since Sani Langtand doesn't much care for visitors. But I was mindful of the hissing and shouting coming from the cave, and thought an interesting foreign gentleman would be a good distraction for them, even if he did land up going flippity-flappity down the mountain on little web feet. That's what happens to unwelcome visitors in these parts. Sani Langtand makes frogs of them. The foreign gentleman seemed quite reluctant to squeeze past Langbeck and into the cave, but I had a good grip on him. Visitor! I called out as we came into the glow of the firelight, in case Sani Langtand was about to do anything embarrassing, like clonk Slangbeck over the head with her iron pot. Slangbeck was quite pleased to see the visitor, but Sani Langtand was still as bad-tempered as ever. "Can't find your way back," she hooted mockingly once he told his tale with much bowing and grovelling. "What kind of explorer do you call yourself? Just turn your back on where you've got to and follow your nose back home again. That's what I do. Even this old lizard Slangbeck can manage it half the time." Sani Langtand drummed her fingers on her nose as she said this, and I must say that it was quite true that Sani Langtan's long snout is perfect for following, since it sticks out like a compass needle and is covered with stiff hairs that twitch like antenna in the dark.
The most enormous nose it is too, dear madam,
gibbered the foreign gentleman before he could stop himself.
Frog time, I thought to myself, and I would have been right, except that Slangbeck interrupted and saved him from a life of croaking on the lily pads.
I am getting very fed up of this old hex, he hissed, and the heat from his mouth was like a furnace door opening and slamming on each word. I've known men like this in the days of pirate dows. I could take him home with my eyes shut. Do you think you could do better by sniffing out the way with your great snonker? Well, why don't you shut your eyes and we'll find out, snarled Sani Langtand, reaching for the heavy pot. But Slangbeck wasn't going to be fooled that easily. He kept his eyes open, and Sani Langtan's hand drifted innocently back to her side. If you're so sure you can guide him home, then I'll take you a bet on it, said Slangbeck, licking his lips with a forked tongue. That jar of sour milk against a bright copper pot from my hoard. Done, snapped Sani Langtand, who had always wanted one of Slangbet's pots. You flap and I'll steer. We all went outside to climb on Slangbeck. The foreign gentleman had to be helped up quite roughly. Really, most noble sir and madam, simple directions to the nearest magic carpet repairman are all that is required, he wailed in a thin voice. Shut up, said Sani Langtan, quite pleasantly for her. I said nothing at all. As far as I'm concerned, riding Slangbeck is better than running up mountains with a witch on your back. Slangbeck flapped off the mountainside and swooped over the town. The houses looked like toys far below us. Soon we were deep in the gray cloud, and flecks of frost glittered in my fur. Picture where you want to go and hold the picture in your mind. I'll pick it up from there, roared Slangbeck. Assuming that you have a mind, old hex, he added, not quite softly enough, so that Sanny Langtan thumped him hard on his knobbly head. But Sanny Langtan had a bet to win, so she let Slangbeck peer inside her mind. Judging by his shudders, he didn't much care for what she kept there. And when she had her picture good and sharp, Sanny Langtan leaned forward with her stringy hair whipping in the wind and howled directions in Slangbeck's ear. Sand! She shouted. That's what I'm thinking of. Lots of sand! Like they have in Persia. Well, if you're quite sure, he rumbled, and we disappeared, leaving a dragon-shaped gap in the cloud that slammed shut behind us like a thunderclap. It never takes long to get anywhere when Slangbeck does that particular trick. There's just a sudden lurch, and you're where you want to be. Unless you do something silly, of course, like forgetting to keep your place in time. Aha, chortled Sanny Langtan, as we appeared beside a huge sand dune. Right first time. Sand I aimed for and sand I got. I'm afraid not, old hex, said Slangbeck. It's more or less the right area, but you're off course a bit time-wise. A couple of million years or so, I should think. Says who? Snapped Sanny Langtan aggressively. Says him, answered Slangbeck, nodding at a large Tyrannosaurus Rex that had just trundled round the dune and was standing grinning toothily at us. The foreign gentleman pulled his turban down over his eyes and began gnawing frantically on the tassel. I pushed my head past him and barked in Sanny Langtan's ear. Think of big turbans, I advised urgently, hoping we would hit more modern times. Run, she shouted to Slangbeck. Who needs to be flying before he can play his disappearing trick? Slangbeck scuttled up to the top of the dune. Behind us, we could hear the doof, doof, doof of heavy dinosaur steps as Slangbeck launched himself on spread wings. He circled once over the dunes, looking down at the running dinosaur. I notice that you didn't try clonking that one with a pot, he remarked to Sanny Langtan. The mistress was too busy getting her thoughts together to answer. After a moment, she leaned forward again and howled directions against the blast of the wind. I hoped she had the right picture in mind this time and wasn't thinking of anything unpleasant. When we reappeared, we were still flying, and I was glad that Slangbeck was playing it safe. We were high above a blue ocean, as far from sand as we could possibly be. There was a foreign smell to the air, and the sun was brassy and strong. But I didn't see any big turbans. Perhaps Sanny Langtan's concentration had slipped at the last minute, and she had put us off course again. So, where are the turbans? I asked, but got no answer from Sanny Langtan or Slangbeck.
Excuse me, said the foreign gentleman uncertainly. I seem to see another dragon or two over there.
I could feel Slangbeck's sides grow warmer with interest as he dipped a wing and swooped across the sea. After a while, we could see that they were not proper dragons like Slangbeck, but just brightly painted wooden boats with fiercely carved dragon faces and sails that were ribbed like Slangbeck's wings. Chinese junks, trumpeted Slangbeck, not sounding as disappointed as I thought he'd be. Dragon boats, they call them. I'll show you a thing or two now, Sanny Langtand. He swooped up and down ostentatiously until we were seen. A great commotion burst out on the ships, and swarms of men appeared from below. They knelt down and began knocking their heads on the deck. Big hats, I cried, because some of them were wearing huge round hats, like dustbin lids. Wrong sort, said Sunny Langtan sourly. I was thinking of turbans. Mine must have wandered just a little. What with the other big lizard and all. Why are they banging their heads like that? Slangbeck started laughing. A horrible sound. All snuff! Snuff! Snuff!
They're kowtowing, he sniggered.
It's an act of worship. Dragon worship. Sunny Langtan, in case you were thinking it's for you. Now, that's what I call respect. Could do with more of that where I come from, I can tell you.
We kneel down to bow like that in Persia,
chipped in the foreign gentleman ingratiatingly. He squeaked as Sunny Langtan turned round slowly, and he found himself looking into her beady eyes from a range of about 2 nose lengths. Oh, not to dragons, of course, he gibbered. No. No, not to dragons. You see, we shoot arrows at He stuffed the tassel of his turban back into his mouth and chomped at it energetically. The thump of Slambeck's wingbeats faltered as he thought about that bit. He craned his neck back until he was staring at us upside down. The folk on the boats love that maneuver. I wasn't quite so keen, since it gave me a new angle on all the ugly parts I'd more or less become used to. So, you want me to take him back to where all the arrows are? Said Slangbeck to Sunny Langtan. Don't be a sissy, said Sunny Langtan, who was determined to get her copper pot. Anyway, just think of the good impression you'll make coming back with this fellow. It might stop them shooting at dragons for good. I know a better way to stop them shooting at dragons, muttered Slangbeck, turning round again. This is your last try, old hex. After this, the milk is mine. And so is our little arrow shooter, he added as an afterthought. He made a last few swoops over the dragon boats while Sunny Langtan summoned her concentration. Think of proper turbans, I advised her. Sunny Langtan shrilled her commands, and we disappeared from the big blue sky above the boats like a burst of fireworks. Slangbeck launching gouts of flame to keep the sailors religious. Bullseye, gloated Sunny Langtan, as we burst into existence over a city of tall towers, all ending in points like onions. It was surrounded by sand, and there were lots of palm trees, and men in turbans, like the foreign gentlemen's. The best clue was a huge sign on the dunes, near a landing strip for flying carpets. Welcome to Persia, it said. Something went whip as it shot past us. And a nasty, sharp sound it was, too. I looked up to see a stripy arrow arching up against the sun. Lots more men with bows were running out on rooftops and taking aim at us. Land so I can deliver him, howled Sunny Langtan, her mind full of copper pots. Land and deliver him yourself, grunted Slangbeck, hammering upwards as fast as he could flap. A whole stream of whips were coming past us now, and Slangbeck was swerving like a swallow to avoid them. I want him home on the ground, screamed Sunny Langtan, who knew that Slangbeck could be counted on to weasel out of the bet if given any excuse at all. I don't have to land for that, said Slangbeck. Oofas, he shouted, which meant hold tight in Afrikaans. Now Sunny Langtan and I understood him very well and clung on tightly. But while Afrikaans has a few Arabic words in it, who and fas aren't two of them. When Slangbeck rolled over on his back, the foreign gentleman disappeared with a whoosh.
No, screamed the foreign gentleman, seeing the town spiraling up at him.
No,
screamed Sanny Langtan, seeing her copper pots disappearing like mist. Quick as a flash, we snatched for him. I got the heels and Sanny Langtan got the turban, and for a minute he swung between us like a hammock. Then his feet shot free of his slippers and he was unwinding downward as his turban uncoiled, with Sanny Langtan holding, cursing onto one end and the foreign gentleman going down like a yo-yo on the other. The last I saw of him, he had his arms wrapped round one of the pointy domes and was yelling for the bowmen to shoot us, which I think was a bit ungrateful, considering that he did get home after all and that we had just saved him from going splat on the street below. Sanny Langtan shook the long strip of turban at him like a banner, and I waved goodbye with his slippers, but he didn't wave back. Of course, the moment we got home, Slangbeck did try to weasel out of the bet, claiming that three tries were too many, and leaving someone hanging from a tower didn't count as taking him home. Now Sanny Langtan had an answer to that, and more than hot words were flying in the cave by the time I squeezed out past Langbeck again. So, come to think of it, things were back the way they were when I found the foreign gentleman. Or a bit worse, if anything, with Slangbeck and Sanny Langtan going at it hammer and tongs inside the cave, and me standing out in the rain. Mind you, I did get some fine Persian slippers out of it, and Sanny Langtan got quite a lot of turban cloth, and old Slangbeck even got worshipped by the folks on the boats. But on the whole, I don't think all the trouble was quite worth it. So I'm not going to try anything so clever with the next visitor. I'm just going to bite him like I'm supposed to, and Slangbeck and Sanny Langtan can sort out their own problems.